Hello and welcome to episode 68 of the Offline Gamer. I'm Matt.
And I'm Ray.
Hello, Ray.
Hello.
So, it's going to be a bit of a shorter episode this month because someone has lots of university work they need to do, don't they?
Yes.
How are you getting on so far?
It's going. it's going somewhere. I just got an email this afternoon saying that I've been approved to progress into writing up. So, huzzah!
That's good.
It's doing. I need to do more, basically.
Okay. So we'll have a bit of a chat about what we've been playing. We'll look at a few Kickstarters, the bad ones, because I want to get them out of my saved list. So we'll save the good ones and what we've been backing and stuff until next episode. And in fact, we've actually passed our birthday, haven't we? I've just realised.
Yes, we have.
It's 6 years.
Yes, it is.
2015. So we'll have to do a proper birthday episode soonish as well. We need to get another quiz going, don't we? I've already got in line who I want to invite onto the quiz, but I need to get the questions sorted, so people have got that to look forward to. And also to look forward to later on in the episode is an interview with Angela from Toonhammer, who will be chatting to us about her game Arcosa, which is currently on Kickstarter, and which we have played, well, Karen and I have played, and there is a review on our website. TLDR, we really like it. So, and it's doing quite well on Kickstarter at the moment. So, yeah, we'll hear from her later. But for now, let's just get straight into what we've been playing since our last proper episode, because our last couple have been UKGE based, but we've been doing lots and lots of things in the meantime. So, do you want to do computer games first? What have you been playing in the realm of computer games, Ray?
I got a copy of Frostpunk.
Oh.
About, I don't know, a month ago now.
What's probably. Frostpunk again?
It is a city survival sim.
Okay.
Kind of thing. Basically, climate change, very, very bad. It is winter everywhere, but like really bad winter. So for some reason, some people decide to leave London and walk literally north into the deep Arctic, because that will be the best place to survive a forever winter.
Totally.
Not quite sure on the logic there. But you get there and there's like a big steam generator and you basically have to try and survive in this crater you found with this steam generator, and you've got to manage, like, obviously the cold, people getting sick, not enough food, and, you know, you've got to build different things. So you've got to build, like, a hunter's hut so they can go out and get food, and then you've got to build a cookhouse so that people then cook the raw food that the hunters have got. You have to collect coal, steel and wood to build things. It gets a bit kind of steampunky because there's also, well, obviously, literally everything is based around this steam generator, and mm-hmm. you can build automatons to, like, do stuff 24 hours a day, like gathering resources or whatever. And you send scouts out to different places in this kind of wasteland to try and find resources and other survivors and stuff. And the first game that I went through didn't go very well. So I was like, okay, I can see that we're literally all about to die, so I'm just going to quit and start again. which apparently is, you know, normal. So after that, I found a nice beginner's guide to Frostpunk on Reddit, and I've been following that. I haven't played it in the last couple of weeks, though, just because I haven't had much time. But I did spend, like, quite a while playing it a few Saturdays ago. And it's good to just sort of, you kind of lose time. It's one of those things where you kind of lose time because you're just, like, going between one resource shortage and one event to the next event, to the next piece of research. So it's the classic, like, sim hole that you find yourself falling down, except it's freezing.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
It's by the This War Is Mine people. I was just looking on their website.
Yeah. I only found out about it because there was a Frostpunk 2 announcement. And then for the announcement, they knocked the price down of the first Frostpunk.
Oh, okay.
So I thought, oh, that looks fun, but it's not coming out yet. So
it came out in 2018, the original.
Yeah. So
apparently it says, oh, no, the sequel was announced on August the 12th. Okay, yeah. I see.
So that's about the time that I got it. It's about a month ago, yeah. Mm. Yeah. I also got, but I haven't played yet, why did I get this? I don't know. Oh, yeah, because there was a sale on. I got a pack that had Dishonored 2 and Dishonored Death of the Outsider.
Oh, okay. I've never played the Dishonored games.
I played most of the first one, but in classic Ray style, because I never wanted it to end. I got to the bit where you're about to start the final mission and then just stopped, which is... You know, it's a problem. That's one of the main reasons I don't finish things.
Like, you don't want them to end.
I don't want them to end, so I'll just stop. And then it never technically ends, but yeah. I also never know the ending. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Now it's been so many years since I played Dishonored, I probably would have to play the whole thing through again, and I can't be arsed.
Fair enough. What have I been doing then? I've been playing, continuing my playthrough of the Mass Effect Remastered Legendary Edition. We are now on Mass Effect 3. Oof. As I said before, I'm doing all the combat. Karen is telling me what story choices to make. Spoilers for people who haven't played Mass Effect 1 and 2 coming up. So you might want to skip forward a bit. But so far, she's made very good choices. And everyone is alive. She got everyone through the suicide mission. Oh, no. One person's dead, but that's the person who normally dies. I don't know if you know who that is in Mass Effect 3. Spoilers. Mordin died, and he normally dies in Mass Effect 3 when he cures the genophage, or not, depending on the story choices you do.
Yeah.
But yeah, so far, so good. And I've just started the Citadel DLC. Did you ever do the Citadel DLC?
I don't think so.
It's the one where you get an apartment on the Citadel, and then you get to have, like, little missions, and then all of your past crewmates come along. And then at the end, there's a special little bonus, which I won't spoil, because I know Karen's listening to this, and we haven't got there yet. So.
No, I don't think I did.
No, it's good. Everyone comes back, basically. So you get to see all your old crewmates again. Well, everyone is alive. So there's that. And we've also been dabbling a bit in Mafia, the remastered Mafia. And I bought Watch Dogs Legion because they had a half price weekend a couple of weeks ago. So I've played a little bit of that, which is all right. It's good fun. I think I still prefer the old ones. But I think I've said in the past, the first one is still my favourite out of one and two. But this is fun. It's enjoyable. It's worth, you know, it's the same sort of thing. You wander around hacking things, taking control of drones and all that kind of thing. And this one's set in London as well, but London of the not too distant future, where this evil corporation has taken over all of the security and policing in London. So, and you have to, you know, like in games like Assassin's Creed, where you have to like unlock all of the various districts and make them revolt against the evil people and stuff like that. You have to do this in that as well. So you'll walk along and then you'll see these opportunities that you can do to like cause dissent amongst the population, and then you can cause a borough of London to overthrow the local security force. And then you get these people with really bad London accents going, all right, mate, yeah, let's go. Let's go and show these tossers what we can do with them and all that kind of thing.
So yeah, okay.
There is a bit of that. But yeah, but it's good fun. You get to liberate the London Eye, so that was quite fun. So yeah, I don't know if it's still on offer. I don't think it is, but yeah, it was worth £20, and it comes with all the DLC. Well, there's actually a section. One of the characters you get as part of the thing was an assassin from Assassin's Creed. So there's a crossover, and there's a whole mission where you have to do like Assassin's Creed. You have to do some running around and go into a cave, and you find one of the what they called the objects, and you know, the things where you get the aliens speaking to you. You get to do all that stuff in this, but then you've gained that character as well. So I've been playing the game as the Assassin's Creed character, so that's been quite fun. Shall we talk about our cooperative adventure?
Yes.
So you've convinced me to play Dead Space 3. It didn't take much convincing, to be fair, did it?
No, it didn't take much convincing.
So I picked it up on Steam for, what, £6, I think it was, or something?
Yeah.
And we started playing that the other day. So there's a video. Well, there will be a video on our YouTube channel. I've just exported it from Twitch to YouTube because I realised I'd forgotten to do it. But, yeah, the first couple of hours of gameplay. And, yeah, I'm quite enjoying it. It's not as scary as I thought it would be.
No. I think as you sort of mentioned, it's a bit more of an action-y one because of being a co-op.
Yeah, it reminds me a bit of a Gears of War. They've gone a bit more... Well, I've never played the first two, but from what I gather, they've gone a bit more in that direction than the horror angle.
Yeah, I mean, if you play... What I found is that having played the first one, the second one was slightly less scary, and then playing the third one was even less scary. Okay. And I suspect some of it is knowing the sort of shenanigans that they pull, like jumping out of you out of vents and attacking you in elevators and all this sort of stuff, and like knowing that that kind of stuff is kind of what they do, and like random like pipes just going psht and like shooting some steam in your face when everything's completely silent. After a while I was like, yeah, whatever, get over
it. Yeah, it's coming.
But I guess it's not as scary in the third one also because it's like this co-op-y kind of thing, and yeah, it's a bit more action based, I guess. Because I played, I'm not sure how far I got before, back in 2013 when I last played it.
You probably got to the final mission and then decided not to carry on.
Probably, because I was looking at it and was like, oh, you've played 9.7 hours, and I was like, really? Because there are people who've completed this in a similar time, and I was like, really though, really. And I know it definitely wasn't the same issue that I had when I stopped playing Fear 3, which is where I just got stuck in a room and just kept getting killed. And I was like, yeah, okay, I can't be asked. But yeah, so it wasn't that. I can't remember why I didn't finish it. And it's to the point where I've forgotten most of it. So apart from like, so like when we were going through and it's like, oh, you need to go to the Roanoke. Because I was like, oh, yes, the Roanoke. I remember. That's a ship. and like, I remember taking loads of like in-game screenshots of floating around in space to use as wallpapers.
Oh, right, okay.
Back then. Because it's kind of fun and arty in a dark kind of way.
Yeah.
I do think number two is still slightly superior.
I'll be interested to play the remaster when the remaster of the first one comes out.
Oh, yeah. It's not due out for another like year, which is a shame. Because I was like, yes, Dead Space. And then they're like, yeah, we're not releasing it till like quarter three, 2022. I forgot what year it was then.
Yes, that's next year. Yes, 2022 is next
year. Yeah. So I was like, oh, damn.
You've got plenty of other games to keep you going.
Yeah, I know. But Dead Space is one of those like games that was quite fun. And
we better tell people what the plot is all about, because there's probably quite a few people who don't know.
Dead Space. So
strange alien artifacts. What are the artifacts called again?
Markers.
Markers, that's it. So the first one was a black marker?
I think so. So the first one, you're like an engineer. You're called up. You're Isaac Clarke in all the games. Well, I am in this game. You're not.
You're not.
The forgettable other character.
on the red shirt.
Yeah. So in the first one, you've got to go and rescue a ship that's gone out of contact. But then when you get there, it's all kind of a bit grim. And there's loads of scary monsters running around and you can't find any of the crew. Suspicious. And it's like they were mining on a planet and they dug up this marker. And the marker they thought was going to give them like unlimited power, like, as in the like power as in energy sense, not power as in political. But it also sort of evolves humans. And then you sort of got this like cult-like religion called Unitology that wants to evolve all of humanity by using the markers.
When you say evolve, you mean turn them all into zombies?
Yeah, scary monsters. You kind of have to fight your way through the ship because most of your crew die and you get separated instantly, of course.
As is the way.
Yeah, and you have to like build your own weapons and stuff as you go along. And eventually you have to go and have a big boss fight down on the planet and try and destroy the marker. And then you're kind of just, I can't remember whether it's a similar ending to Alien where you're basically just floating in space on like a life raft shuttle thing. And that's where I can't remember if that's where they left it after the first one, because it was very ambiguous. So they could have left it. And then they could have done a second game, and they did do a second game.
So the second one, as far as I understand, is pretty much the same, but instead of the black marker, someone has made lots of duplicates of it, and those duplicates are then doing the same thing that the black marker did. Is that
kind
right?
Kind of. So you're back on Earth, I think. Maybe you're in the home solar system, whatever. And Isaac has been sort of imprisoned, kind of, to manipulate him into building the red markers.
Oh, right, okay. Oh, because he's got like an imprint of it in his brain or something, hasn't
he? Yeah. So there's a particularly lovely scene in Dead Space 2 where you have to do some eye surgery on yourself. And the variety of monsters is a bit more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Some might say a bit more grim.
Okay.
Because there's obviously lots of other sorts of humans around.
Well, they need to one-up themselves, don't they? Because they need to take it to the next level.
There is a swarm of zombie babies in Dead Space 2.
Of course there is.
And then you sort of have to... You're trying to topple Unitology, basically. And similarly, in Dead Space 3, now you're on the run because Unitology are actually quite powerful, scarily. Oh, okay.
They're
trying to kill you, to stop you, because you know how to, like, destroy their evil plan. So, you end up going to rescue your ex-girlfriend slash ex-wife, whatever she is, who's also an expert on markers now, because there's some plot that I've forgotten. And you end up basically at the marker homeworld, which has a lot of like 200-year-old ship debris floating around, because turns out somebody found it a long time ago and then they all killed themselves to stop it from getting out. And I can't remember
how it ends. Isn't it? Well, that's fine, because we need to get there, don't we? So
yeah,
we are going to complete it, okay? I'm not letting you make me go through all this and then at the end you're going to say, right, I'm not playing anymore.
No, I will finish the game. Okay. I've evolved since not finishing Dishonored. Dishonored is very old now. There are kids in secondary school that are older than that game now.
Oh no.
Which is worrying.
Okay. That's video games then, so that's what we've been doing. Let's talk about board games. There's a couple that we've played together, so shall we talk about those first?
Go on then.
So, well, the first one's your game. So why don't you tell us all about our experiences playing Dice Forge?
Right. Well, Dice Forge, which has been on my shelf for a while now, is kind of... it's not really a deck builder game, because it's kind of similar mechanics, but instead of a deck, you're building dice. So you're improving your dice by drafting new faces to put on the dice to then roll better dice and try and get more points, basically. So we had a game of four. Handily, I had set it up probably 2 years ago at this point, ready with all the starter faces on the dice. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of fun pinging dice faces around Asgard, because they don't come off necessarily very easily.
They don't. We did have a couple of minor mishaps with them flying halfway across the cafe, didn't we?
Yeah. But basically, you're trying to get certain types of energy to buy certain types of card or dice faces, and then the cards give you points and also some actions. And then, there's a set number of rounds based on how many people there are playing, and at the end of that, whoever has the most points wins. It's kind of simple in that respect, but there were a lot of things that we had to refer to the thingy for.
It's mostly about figuring out what the icons mean, isn't it? That's the main thing. Once you figure out what you're doing, it's not that difficult. I think the thing I like about it is that, I mean, it's effectively a deck builder, but with dice. But the good thing about it is that when you upgrade your dice, it's not like a deck builder where you're adding more cards to your pool. You are instantly removing one of the junk ones and replacing it with a better one. And if you're really lucky, you can keep rolling high numbers, can't you? So to get better, you know, resources to buy things, which I quite like. You know, it's not a thing I don't like about deck builders, because, you know, I like a good deck builder. But, you know, the fact that you've got to actively get rid of the rubbish cards as well as buying better ones. So it just takes that. Little bit of it away, but I think it's very well done. It's very straight and streamlined, and the art is really nice as well.
Yeah.
And then after that, we played. After that, we had lovely food, didn't we? But then after that, we played Last Bottle of Rum, which was a little pirating game that I got a few months ago from Kickstarter. Where we're all little pirates. We're not little pirates, but we've all got our little ships on the board, and there's tiles, and you're basically moving your little ships around, flipping the tiles over to see what's underneath them, and looking for treasure, and then you've got to take it back to the big pirate's hideout in the middle, and the person at the end who's got the most treasure is the winner, and claims the last bottle of rum, which was quite appropriate given what you'd bought me for my birthday.
Yes.
Which was a bottle of Captain Morgan's Tiki Mango and Pineapple. Well, it says spirit drink because it's not technically rum, is it? But it's rummish. Is rummish a word? Yeah, it's a word, isn't it?
It's probably based on rum.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the last bottle of rum. It was enjoyable. There was nothing. It wasn't, you know, particularly deep, but there was a little bit of strategy because you got cards that you can play on the other players and cards that let you do things to improve your chances of getting treasure. But yeah, it's just a fun little game. And what did Chris think of both of these games? Because obviously he's not a gamer, and he got to play them both. Did he say he enjoyed himself?
Yeah, I think he said he enjoyed both of them.
So while we're on the subject of playing games with people who aren't gamers, last night I went to Asgard and played a couple of games, and I off the cuff said to my nephew, do you want to come with me? And he went, yeah, all right. So I ended up bringing him to Asgard, and he's only played a couple of games because I've convinced him a couple of times to play things with me. But so we had a couple of 6-player games. Yeah, the first game we played was a game called Hit the Silk, which was actually on Kickstarter a while back, but it's not my game. This was Adam from Die Rolling, who was facilitating the evening, shall we say. He's the one who got everyone together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a social bluffing game where you're all criminals on a plane trying to escape the mob, and there's loads of money on the plane. And I can't quite remember the backstory, but effectively there are only 5 parachutes for the 6 people who are on the plane. So you've got all these various cards that let you do things like shoot other players or look at their hand or steal cards from their hand. And the point of the game is that you have to get £160,000 between you all, and then you can vote to jump off the plane at any point if you think you meet that. But obviously you can't, if you haven't got a parachute, you won't want to jump off the plane. But it's basically if 4 people or 5 people think between them they've got enough money, they can then say, okay, we're going to jump off the plane. And that's exactly what happened. I ended up at the end. So my nephew is a pain in the arse when it came to this game. What, 2 of us both got poisoned during the course of the game, and he had an antidote in his hand. And I know he did because he took it off me at one point, I think. So I knew he had it. And myself and one of the other players, both at different points in the game, made deals with him to say, we'll give you one of these cards in our hand for $20,000 if you'll give us the antidote. And both times, he gave us worthless stuff in return.
Oof.
Which was horrible.
Oof.
So eventually they got to the point where the other 5 people all had parachutes, and between them they had enough money to jump off the plane, so they did. So I was left on the plane on my own with no parachute. But there's an extra mechanic at the end. If you're left on the plane at the end, there's like this extra board with lots of dots, like 10 deep, 20 across. It's not that many, but something like that. And the plane is in the top left-hand corner, and you roll 2 dice, and you choose one of the dice to move horizontally and one of them to move vertically. And there's a little landing strip in the bottom right-hand corner of the sort of board. So you have to roll 2 dice and then move your plane, and then roll 2 dice and move your plane. And then to try and land on the little landing strip in the bottom. And then if you do land on the landing strip, you have to roll 1 final dice and move that many spaces to hope that you don't go off the edge of the landing strip and the plane explodes or whatever. And if you manage to successfully land the plane, you win the game, which I did. So everyone else abandoned it with all this money, but I got whatever money was left at the end. So I actually won the game. So
okay.
Hooray.
Woo-hoo.
So even though it didn't go well for me initially, it all worked out in the end. So that was that. And then after that, we played 7 Wonders, which is a very popular game that I've never played. But I think I've played 7 Wonders Duel, I think, which is the 2-player version.
Yeah.
But it's basically everyone has their own little player board in front of them. There are 3 ages in the game. And what happens is, first of all, everyone will be dealt, I think it's 7 cards from the first age. And they have various resources and things on them that you can buy. And you buy them and you put them in front of you. And as you're going, when you've when you've bought a card, you put it in front of you, and then you pass the remaining cards that you've got in your hand to your left. So everyone's passing the cards around. So you don't know, obviously, what you're going to be buying next time. But then over time, what you're doing is you're building up the resources that you've got in front of you to enable you to build more powerful things that get you points at the end of the game. And also you can use the resources to build like armies. And then what happens is at the end of every age, your army is compared to the players on the left and right of you. And for everyone you win against, you lose, you gain points, and everyone you lose against, you lose points. So that's all going on as the game is playing. And at the end, you just tally up all of the cards that everyone's got. There are ones that give you bonuses if you've got a certain number of a specific colour, all that kind of thing. And then the person at the end is with the most points is the winner. And again, that was me. I won that one as well. So we played two games last night, and I won them both. So I was quite happy with that.
Woohoo!
Indeed.
Well done.
And I think that's pretty much everything we've been playing since the last episode. So, what do we want to do now, Ray? Do we want to do something good or something bad?
I don't know.
Let's do the bad thing first. Let's get it out of the way.
Okay.
So we're wandering over to Kickstarter Corner this month. But we are not going to look at games that we've backed or that we're interested in. We are going to do our regular look at the bottom of the barrel, games that are trying to cash in on the coronavirus or the political satire games. So, satire or coronavirus first, Ray?
Let's go for satire.
Satire, okay. So the first one is Scars and Stripes. It's a deck builder card game based around all your favourite Commander-in-Chiefs. So it's builder where you're playing all of the various presidents of the United States.
Yes, my favourite Commanders-in-Chief. What? surely it should be Commanders-in-Chief, not Commander-in-Chiefs.
Yeah, you're right. Commanders in Chief should be, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's minus 1 point already.
Well, you'll be pleased to know this game actually funded and raised just over $5,000.
Yeah, I do see that. Yeah. George Smashington.
Is that the guy? Oh, no, that's... Oh, okay, that's who you're playing. Okay, George Smashington. Yes, I see.
Yeah.
The Fourth of Supply. Very good. Roundhouse Roosevelt, who's kicking someone in the face. What's the Abraham Lincoln one then? Doesn't say, does it?
No.
There's a picture of him though. So, just no?
I mean, meh.
Yeah. Okay.
Just generally.
Generally meh? Okay. Just
generally meh.
Let's move on to Election Night in America, which is a 2-4 player board game where you are a candidate running for the presidency. This game didn't successfully fund. They only got half of their goal of $20,000, which I think was slightly optimistic.
Yeah, it looks like all of these kind of games.
First choose a party and a candidate. Then build a deck filled with four influences. Gather enough influence to win a state's electoral votes. Win 270 electoral votes and become the president.
Hooray.
Yeah. They were... It's interesting. I'm looking at the Kickstarter rewards, right? You pledge $25 for a copy of the game, but it doesn't just say you get the game. No, no, no. You get 9 18-inch game boards. You get a 9x18-inch game board. You get 2 influence dice, 1 special action die, 2 red cubes, 2 blue cubes, 2 yellow cubes, 2 green cubes, 3 Democrat Party presidential candidates, 3 Republican Party presidential candidates, 3 Green Party presidential candidates, 3 independent blah, 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 blah. And so they've listed out the entire contents of the game in the pledge, which is a bit weird. But anyway, it didn't fund, so
no.
That's that one.
Never mind. What a shame.
Now, you know, when Donald Trump was president, we had lots of games taking the mickey out of Trump.
Yeah.
We've now got our first Joe Biden game. Well, the first one I've seen, which is Bunch of Malarkey. Let's face it, Joe says some hilarious things that make you ask the question, what the hell did he just say? I get the feeling this is a fairly right-wing person who doesn't like Joe Biden very much. Yeah. But I might be wrong. But that's certainly the vibe that the game gives off. This is made by the guy who made the game Smartass, which I actually happen to have in this room. It's behind me in this cupboard. He's,
for some reason, decided to post loads of pictures of newspaper articles clippings. And an award that he got for Smartass instead of talking about the game that he's currently pitching. Which makes me suspicious. It's like, look, look, I did this thing. That means you must have, you must approve of my next thing.
Indeed. Put the stack of Biden cards in the centre. Every player receives 2 approved cards and 2 come on man cards. And the first player is the card reader and selects a card from the top of the stack and reads it out loud. For example, I have hairy legs. All other players then have to decide whether the quote is true or false by placing either their approved or come on man card on the table. Once all players have played a card, the card reader then reveals if the quote is true or if it's just a bunch of malarkey. All players who guess correctly throw out the card they played. All players who guessed incorrectly take their card back. Okay. It's just a party game, isn't it?
Yeah.
A simple party game. Next up is the 52nd State, a lawmaking card game for people who hate politics. They're all American again. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
This one again funded. This one got $16,000.
This just looks like Cards Against Humanity, but politics.
I think it pretty much is, to be
honest. Based on the examples that are on the thing.
On each player's turn, they'll propose a law by combining an issue and a law. The group can vote on this conversation as is, or another player can propose an exception to be combined with these two cards. For example, the issue, vigilantism, the law is not permitted by anyone under the age of 18. The exception, unless accompanied by a parent or guardian. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not horrible, but it doesn't appeal to me, so.
No, I mean, one of the examples in the video is slightly ruder.
Is it? I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
The other example on the campaign is the issue, chewing loudly. So the law is legal if you're enrolled in a culinary program. But the exception is, but it's illegal if you're being a jerk about it. So there you go. Yeah. That's the 52nd State.
Not particularly funny from those examples, but okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. And the last one, which you're going to absolutely love, I can just tell straight away. It's Deterioration, the game. A political board game satirising America's political left, made by conservatives for conservatives, fuelled by liberal tears.
Sigh.
And this again funded. It got nearly 20k.
Oh, delightful. Well, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's put Chris McMahon on the never buy from list.
I mean, I heard this. The feedback was positive. They told me I had to somehow make this game available to the rest of the silent majority fed up with the politically correct cancel culture plaguing our country.
I mean, it also kind of just looks like a 5-year-old designed it.
Join me in the fight against the leftist loons.
This does just seem like a bit of a con. GoFundMe, I'm edgy kind of thing. Like, hey, give me some money to be edgy, twat. And I might make a game.
Well,
but it looks like a 5-year-old made it. All I can conclude is that there are a lot of stupid people in the world. People who paid for that.
Yep.
But why? Why?
I mean, he could be left leaning and be doing it just as a joke.
He could
just
be.
Just to try and con some money out of people, but I doubt it.
It could be, but it still looks like a 5-year-old made it.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on from the American political games. We've got coronavirus games now.
Uh-oh.
Corona Nerved, a brisk, humorous card game for all players who are annoyed by Corona. What better way to be annoyed by it than by a game about it? This had a funding goal of €1,000 and didn't meet it.
And it was cancelled.
It was. 120 cards. It's a fast card game based on an idea by 8-year-old Jaina? Jaina Martin from Germany.
Or it might be Jana.
Oh, Jana. Yeah, if it's German. The coronavirus pandemic has proved a challenge for all of us so far, but for Jana and many children, the lack of contacts, homeschooling and online teaching are not always pleasant experiences. It can be really annoying, says Jana when she first presented the game. I mean, they're not wrong, but my first instinct wasn't to create a game about it. There wasn't really much information about the game, to be honest, so that's probably why it didn't fund.
Probably.
Maybe. So that was that. What's this next one? A pandemic trading card game. Can you look in the future? And it says it's called, the video says it's called Pandemic 2030. So they're being very optimistic, aren't they? It's a trading card game.
And they've got an Illuminati symbol in the video. And their icon is an Illuminati symbol.
Illuminati symbol, okay.
Of course.
A trading card game about the pandemic in a fun way. Lovely.
Yes.
The product comes in a booster box with booster packs. And three backers pledged a grand total of £25 for this game. So, didn't meet its funding goal.
The very first line is, everyone is currently being touched by the plan behind Corona. Can you see the truth in the cards?
Ooh.
The cards come in booster packs. So it's basically just a money printing con for conspiracy theorist idiots.
Are you saying the coronavirus isn't a global conspiracy from all the governments trying to control us?
No, it is not.
Oh, you just ruined my day.
Well, don't worry, you'll get your firmware update shortly.
My booster shot, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not over 50, I'm not eligible yet.
By Christmas.
Maybe, yeah. And the last one is COVID-19, but 19 in Roman numerals, so COVID-XIX. Dissecting the coronavirus. This is a deck of cards, actually. It's not a game. Okay. I'm not quite sure what they're supposed to be.
It's not very...
Is it like... Is the background like the genetic... it's like the genetic marker or something, or the makeup of it.
I don't know, maybe.
The back design is composed of four single subunits of the SARS-CoV-2 main protease. In the actual subcellular environment, the functional protein is built of two subunits appearing in a heart-shaped structure. I can't speak. Well, there you go. So they've used the 3D models of the virus to incorporate it into the design of the cards, which is unique, I suppose. But
as you do.
Yeah. But again, that didn't get very well. That's 24 backers who only pledged £600 and they wanted £13,500. So.
Yeah. I mean, one set of cards is a set of cards, and
yeah.
I mean,
it's like those little cubes that had the virus inside. Do you remember those?
Oh yeah, that was just weird. I don't know.
No.
Kickstarter seems to be getting more and more ridiculous every time we do these.
You mean the bad things? The good things are good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the bad things are bad.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about a good thing then. So, as we said earlier on in the show, we have now a chat I had a few days ago with Angela from Toonhammer, who talked to me about her new game, Arcosa, but also what got her into gaming and what inspired her to make this game, and lots of other topics about Kickstarter and board games in general. So I guess we'll have a listen to that now, and we'll see everyone on the other side. So we're here with Angela from Toonhammer. Angela, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me on the podcast.
It's my pleasure. We always like to get British designers on the show, and especially the independent guys, because we say this on our podcast a lot, but the big companies get enough publicity. We want to help the little guys get their games out to market. So
that's very much appreciated. We need all the help we can get.
Yes. So before we start talking about your game, which is currently on Kickstarter as we record this, and will be when everyone hears this, the first question we always ask our guests who've never been on the show before is, what is your gaming background? How did you get into board games?
Ah, okay. So originally I had more of a sort of a video game background. That's what I did mostly growing up. It was all about the video games.
Same here.
And I didn't really get into tabletop games until about maybe 2015, 2016. My gateway game was Ticket to Ride Europe.
Yeah.
Classic.
A lot of people say that. Ticket to Ride or Carcassonne are the two main ones, I think, these days.
Yeah, I remember playing that and thinking, oh, this is a lot different from Scrabble and Monopoly and the other games that I know exist. And then that sort of opened me up to a whole world of different board games. I remember watching, what's that show with Will Wheaton?
Oh, Tabletop.
Yeah. I watched a lot of that, and then I got games off that, like Small World.
Oh, I did that as well.
And, yeah.
For me, it was Epic Spell Wars.
Yeah. Oh,
when they
yes.
did the Epic Spell Wars episode, I was like, that looks fun. I've got to get me a copy of that.
Yeah. Yeah, they played lots of good games on that, and that's when the I started branching out into more sort of like hobbyist games, and I started with a little shelf, which then grew into sort of a 2x2 Kallax, that then grew into a 4x2 Kallax. Yeah. And now behind me, well, you can see, I know you can't see audio wise, but I've gone to full on custom built shelves to try and fit on as many games as possible. And I've got a good, maybe 100, 200 games in the collection now.
That sounds about the same as me. And we got into gaming in around the same time, because 2015 was when I started. So yeah, Flux was my gateway into the hobby.
Which one?
Just normal Flux initially.
Standard.
And now I've got like 15 different versions.
Yeah, I've got the zombie one. I think that's on the show.
What have I got? Star, and then I've got all the Star Trek ones, and I've got Chemistry, Anatomy, Drinking Flux, which I haven't used as a proper drinking game, but I'm sure it will. Do at some point. But yeah, I've got lots and lots and lots of copies of Flux. I seem to be addicted to it.
It's a good game, definitely.
So that's your gaming background. Well, you're like me then, because as I up until I was in my mid-30s, computer games were the thing. So I guess actually some of that can be seen in your game as well. So what sort of games did you enjoy playing as from a computer gaming perspective?
I grew up, my family had a Mega Drive. That was like the first console. I think Sonic 2 was the very first video game.
It's the best one anyway.
Probably, yeah. and then we went on to Nintendo after that. We had an N64. The first console I owned, because these were my brother's consoles, the first console I owned was a Dreamcast, which I loved.
You're one of the few people who owned one.
Games like Shenmue and Sonic Adventure and Choo Choo Rocket and stuff like that. But
I never had a Dreamcast, but a friend of mine did, and we spent hours playing Crazy Taxi.
Oh yes, that's such a good game. That's the one where they had arcade versions of that, and you could just absolutely rinse your money playing endless games of Crazy Taxi. And then that's continued into my adulthood. I've got a Switch and a PS4. I haven't abandoned the video games completely. I just now do both board games and video games. Yeah, I don't know if anything directly inspired Arcosa. That was more inspired by birthday cards, actually.
Interesting.
Brought the game about. It was a friend of mine who does the art would always give me a birthday card every year. And that card would be like two alien creatures in some kind of desolate landscape, and one would be giving the other one a birthday cake. And the creatures were always very weird and alienoid, and sometimes you get little robots and things like that. And I thought, oh, it'd be really cool to make like a game based around this world and these characters. And so that's how Arcosa came about. Lots of consoles over the years, lots of different games. I say PC gaming, but I'm Mac person now.
Oh dear. Might have to cut this conversation short then.
Sorry.
No, I have nothing against Mac users. I work in IT support, and I know the general consensus among IT support people is that you don't want to get Macs for anything serious. I have no problems with Macs, so you're okay.
That's fair enough. Sadly, I don't make board games full time. My day job is a web developer. I'm actually probably one of the rare web developers that use a Mac. But it's what I learned at university when I was learning how to use different softwares and stuff, and I just ended up getting used to it and just sticking with what I knew.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
Obviously, so you just mentioned your inspiration for Arcosa, but did you have in the back of your mind before that you wanted to make a board game and were struggling for a theme or anything like that, or was that really the spark that set you on the journey?
Arcosa is the second game, the second Toonhammer game.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, we did have one game before this one, which we crowdfunded in 2018. It's called Goblin Goblins. Which is like a family friendly card game, sort of take that mechanics, quite simple. Yeah, so that was the first game. After I'd been playing board games and stuff for a while, I was like, oh yeah, I'd like to have a go at this, because I've always been about sort of making games. I've always like, when I was growing up, I wanted to be a video game designer, which didn't quite happen. Went down the web developer route, but I still got to do a bit of that through like sort of flash games. I made like a little iOS game at one point. So I got to do that a little bit, but mostly just websites. So I realized it was going to have to be something I pursued in my spare time if I wanted to make games properly. Goblin Goblins came first. Successfully crowdfunded that 2018, just it was pretty close. a lot of lessons were learnt in that campaign, which carried over into this new one. The game design thing in general has been a thing from a young age, whether it was just sort of games in the playground that I was making up, or you know, actual digital games and now board games. With Arcosa, like I said, the spark came from those birthday cards. But in terms of theme, I really like post-apocalyptic. It's one of my favourite themes. I'm always watching post-apocalyptic movies. They're my go-to kind of films. And sci-fi. I really like sci-fi as well. I like the idea of bunker building for some reason. I just thought that might be a fun theme. I'll admit I played a lot of Fallout Shelter.
Fallout Shelter? Yeah.
In the run-up to making Arcosa.
I was going to ask, so that answers that question, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a board game now, Fallout Shelter. But the games play very differently, so I don't think I'll be in any
kind of... It's probably not as good as yours.
Oh, well, that's very kind. I heartily agree.
Yes.
Biasedly.
Right. So... Tell everyone what Arcosa is all about then. We know it's a bunker building game, but let people know, you know, a bit more about the theme and the mechanics and how the game plays.
Sure. So Arcosa is the name of the planet that the game's set on. Like good post-apocalyptic games. It was quite a nice planet. It was like a prosperous trading hub in the galaxy. But then a mysterious event has rendered it a toxic and chaotic, hostile wasteland. So the people, I say people, the creatures, the robots that were left behind, the only way they found to survive was in bunker colonies under the ground. So as a player, you have to take control of one of those bunker colonies, and basically you're trying to win your ticket off the planet. There's a passing mining ship which has picked up the distress beacon and has agreed to take one colony off the planet. And of course, it only has limited room, so it can only be one colony. So the players have to sort of scramble to have the best reputation by the end of the game to make sure that they're rescued. So it's a bit of like a point salad. There's lots of different ways of getting points. You recruit colonists, which are worth a certain amount of points. You build up rooms in your bunker. Collecting resources is also going to be worth points, which can also be converted into bribes, because bribery is great for getting yourself on a rescue ship. You've got to keep your colony happy. Try not to starve them too much. Maybe distract them with entertainment. Keep that morale up. That'll give you points as well. And mechanically it's just it's like a sort of an action pool game. You'll be doing all these things from just like a few core actions, building a room, putting a colonist to work, trading. The decision making is based around how to build your bunker, which is like the engine building aspect of the game. What to do with each colonist, whether to play it safe, maybe they make some resources, or maybe send them out into the wastelands to try and recruit more people, or to try and scavenge for more resources. And then through the exploring, that's where a lot of this kind of the narrative comes into the game, because there's various events that can occur to you while your explorer is out in the wastelands. And that's where a lot of the humor of the game comes in, because it's a game that doesn't really take itself too seriously. It's quite tropey. It's quite tongue in cheek. I think that's a decent summary. I know you've played it, so you can.
I have. You've conveyed the essence of the game very well there.
Ah, good. I probably should be able to explain it by now, but yeah.
So how far is the game now from your initial concepts? Is it when you initially had the idea of the game, was it quite fully formed in your mind, or has there been a lot of iterations before you got to this point?
It sort of stemmed from the bunker building, and I think exploration was always there. The core thing about building the bunker and exploring, that's not really changed. It's just the way that occurs has gone through a lot of iterations. There's like raid events in the game, which can happen intermittently. And the way they were triggered, that went probably through the most iterations. It was really hard to get the balance of those right. There's an exploration track that goes round the board, which is quite key to the game now. That's actually something that wasn't in the core idea. The way you have to sort of time your explorations and different effects can trigger. That was quite interesting the way that developed. It hasn't strayed too far from what the original idea was. It's just been perfected over, it's been 3 years. It seems crazy that it's been about 3 years. Though it did, the lockdowns, it sort of ground to a halt a little bit, the development of the game during the lockdowns, because we started doing like a sort of weekly live stream quiz, which took up a lot of time during those lockdowns. So I say 3 years, maybe it's kind of been more like two that it's been developed for.
The last 18 months have been a bit of a pain for playtesting as well, I can imagine. So
yeah, definitely. the things like Tabletop Simulator and Tabletopia have been really useful, though. I have been able to do sort of digital play testing. It's only gone on to Tabletopia recently, actually, because that's surprisingly straightforward to get a game on there. I thought it was going to be a lot more complicated than it was. So fair play to them. They've got a good system.
I've never designed it. Are the assets relatively interchangeable between TTS and Tabletopia? Or do you have to reformat them?
A little bit. Like, with Tabletop Simulator, you sort of have to use, they have like a deck building tool. You get all your images together and then you form them into one big image with their deck building tool. In Tabletopia, you sort of upload the images individually.
Oh, right.
But I can use the same set of images. So that's quite interchangeable. I'm trying to think what else might be. The boards kind of have to be different sizes. So that was a bit less interchangeable. Tabletopia are a bit stricter on their limits on sort of the maximum size you can have of things. Yes, some bits yes, some bits no. There's a bit of column A, bit of column B. But,
that was just for my own curiosity. I've always wondered, because I've always thought sometimes, you know, it'd be interesting to dabble in that kind of thing, but I've never really got around to it. I opened up the TTS deck thing once and then thought, I need a bit more time to work on this before.
It's not super intuitive, that one. No. It's like anything, it's just a learning curve. You just got to work out what works, what doesn't.
So you said earlier you learned a few lessons from your first campaign. I'd like you to expand on that a little, but also the lessons that you learned from the first Arcosa campaign as well, because obviously this is the relaunch. So initially, what learnings were you taking into your first Arcosa campaign from was it goblins?
Yes, goblins. What gobble things? goblins. I think the very big lesson from that was just the amount of promotion you have to do leading up to a campaign. Like a lot of people, I sort of got a bit blindsided by looking at the success of things like, you know, Exploding Kittens and stuff like that, and thinking, oh, if I just make sort of like a silly card game with some nice drawings, then people will just find it and back it. But that's not really the case at all. You have to work hard to get it out there. You have to go to conventions and things. You have to you have to market it quite a lot, and it's even more so now because it's so congested. Kickstarter, there's so many projects out there. But luckily we did just about enough to get goblins over the line. That was the main lesson, really. One sort of personal lesson would be I took into the first Arcosa was keeping the pledges simple. I think with Goblins, we had all these different pledges, like you can have a set of coasters, or you could have a framed picture of one of the goblins, or there was some signed art. There was what else was there? There was about 10 different pledges, and when it came to the actual fulfilling of it was actually a bit of a nightmare. So with Arcosa one, I guess we'll call it campaign one, I decided just to keep it simple, just the game, the end. And I think that will make the latter half, you know, the logistics of distribution and stuff a lot easier.
Especially given the current shipping issues that are happening everywhere. So
yeah, absolutely, it is a bit of a nightmare at the moment. So lessons going from Arcosa 1 to Arcosa 2. The first campaign really suffered from not giving people enough reason to back now rather than waiting till later. And we went quite extreme with the change going into campaign two, because campaign two is now entirely Kickstarter exclusive. So there was a lot of thinking behind that, sort of mostly thinking about how I want to sort of operate Toonhammer in general. Like, do I want to be producing these like massive print runs and then have all this stock to worry about and how to distribute it and have all the logistics of that going on, or do stuff more like a one shot, you know, back the game, get the game. If we have any surplus, I can then go to like local conventions or local game stores, offer copies to them. Don't have to store like a thousand copies in the loft or something like that. So for a small indie, which we very much are, it just makes a lot more sense to work that way. But obviously that gives a huge incentive to people to back the campaign now, because it's going to be, it won't be available online or anything to buy after the campaign. So yeah, I think that's the biggest difference with campaign two. And we've been doing early bird pledges in this one as well, because like I said, the day one of the first campaign was not great, and the day one of this campaign that's just gone is, we've more than like tripled what we did in day one of campaign one. So we have these sort of founders pledges that give the backer their, it's their name in the rule book, but rather than just like a bog standard list of backers, what we're doing is we're having Matty Harrison, the illustrator, is going to be drawing like a big relic style rock in the rule book, where we're going to etch backers' names into the stone in a more sort of artistic way, rather than just like a list of names, which I think will be more fun. And I think people like the sound of that as well, because we're nearly sold out of them, I think.
I'm just looking as of recording, you've got 13 left.
13, oh yikes.
One of the current backers is myself, so I'm looking forward to seeing my name in that in that lovely piece of rock there.
Excellent. I'll give you a good position on the rock.
Thank you. That's okay, I don't want special treatment.
Okay, I'll give you a rubbish position.
Okay, that's fine. There are no rubbish positions. You don't want to say that, because then people start withdrawing their pledges, being like, oh no, I don't want a rubbish position.
Everyone will have an equally bad / good position on the rock. that was a difference that we made from campaign one to campaign two, which is obviously making a huge difference. And then lots of other just sort of little things, like it wasn't on Tabletopia in campaign one, but now it is, so more people can try it out.
I noticed there's a few changes to the general layout of the campaign and the artwork as well. What was I'm guessing you had some feedback from people about the initial one that prompted you to make those changes? Or?
Yeah, I started playing around with like the box artwork sort of mid campaign one, just because I thought maybe I could enhance it a little bit, and we got like a little box art vote going, and that actually was really good in campaign one. That got things going a bit better, not enough to get it all the way, but people really engaged with that, and so we had a vote, and we got this sort of new distressed white borders sort of style thing going on with the white logo, and I think the box art looks a lot more striking now, and I've sort of carried that over into more of the cards and things and other components throughout the page. I'm trying to think what else I'd change. We've had more landscapes done. Matty's done more landscapes and things since campaign one, so it's been nice to showcase just a bit more artwork, which is good. Social stretch goals, actually, that's a new thing we've done. It kind of feels like, I don't know, I always feel like it feels a bit spammy stuff like that.
I know what you mean.
But someone in the previous campaign said you kind of have to do it because it's crowdfunding, and I was like, okay, well, we'll do it then. And that's actually been working pretty well, because it's spreading. The project is spreading itself around a bit more. It's getting it in front of more people. So that's working quite well. So we've got a social stretch goal at the moment for the, it's called the allocation station, which is a new room you can add to your bunker. It's like an administration room for your bunker.
I like the name. It's yep. good bit of rhyming there.
Thank you. I did name all the rooms and the people. but all the writing, actually, I should say, the writing, like the events and stuff, and the flavor text, that's by a man called Adam Haynes, and his sort of tone is just perfect for the game. It's very like Portal or Borderlands in its sort of kind of humor, and it's tongue-in-cheek, and
I think it suits the design of the game really well, I have to say. When we played it, we had a good laugh reading some of the cards and descriptions and things. So, yeah, I think he's done a good job.
Yeah, that's good. I shall pass that on.
So, while we're talking about the cards then, do you have any cards that are your personal favourites in the game? Karen, my partner, who wrote our review, asked me to ask you this. Yeah, she wanted to know what your favourite colonist mechanics were specifically. Hers was Joe, the guy who explodes.
Yeah, that's the classic one. That's Combustible Joe has a special place in my heart for sure. I mean, it's just such a great concept that he can do all this great stuff, but he might explode. It's just a hazard. He's been nerfed actually since the copies went out, which is something I couldn't incorporate into the preview copies because there's some like end game bonus scoring. I don't know if you used that in your plays of the game at all.
We didn't. We played whatever the basic version of the game was.
Yeah, so there's some like end game scoring now, which awards some bonus points if you have like the best type of each stuff, like if you have the best entertainment stuff best science stuff. And because Joe falls in every category and he's worth 6 points, he was like a bit too powerful. If he didn't explode, he was a bit too powerful. So he got nerfed a bit on points, but mechanically. Yeah, he cracks me up. But I think actually my favorite one I came up with was the time traveler. I thought that was quite fun. So the time traveler, they're called Tom B, I believe. So you roll the dice, and if he goes back in time, you can use him again. But if he goes forward in time, you have to put him to like the bottom of the deck because he might come out in the future, kind of thing. Because he's in the future. I thought, oh yeah, that makes sense. So I quite liked that one as well. The party one is also quite fun, of the special colonists that can just throw a big party and leave. That one's been quite subjective actually, because in my head, so the character, like you have to spend 2 nitrogen, which is what our chosen creatures breathe, of course. And then you get, I think it's like 5 morale or something, because it's a big party, everyone's breathing heavily. And then they leave. So in my head, they were like just the traveling party person. So they're off to the next big party. But then I played a game with a friend of mine who had that person, and they were like, they throw the big party and then they die. And I was like, that's not what I thought they did.
I think they sound more like an intergalactic Duff man.
Simpsons, yeah.
Just roll in, have a nice party, and then roll out again.
Duff guy is
the
party. Oh, yeah. But that's one thing I like about the game. There's bits that you can sort of interpret what's happened a little bit for yourself. So, you know, in that player's head, they had partied themselves to death. It had been such a good party, you know, morale is high. But I like little moments like that where you sort of create some of the story for yourself.
Yeah.
As well as, you know, the actual stories from events and things that you get. It's just adds to the humor of the world, which I think is fun. So yeah, I don't know if I fully answered the question. The traveler. Okay. If I had to pick one, I think I liked what I did with that one. I think that was my favourite mechanically.
So let's look forward to the future about production and distribution. So what sort of timelines are you looking at the moment?
So shooting for, I think, December next year. We're looking to get around the whole issue with freight costs. Originally, we were looking to get it made in China, but I think we'll probably look to get it made at one of the European manufacturers to try and get around some of those issues with freights and make it more on the haulage and airplane. Like you say, it's a weird time, and I think people are kind of understanding that, you know, there might be delays, but I think, you know, 16 months is probably about right. Is that 16 months? Math. It's 15. 15 months?
Yeah. Something like that.
I think, that sounds about right. With our first project, we managed to get it like bang on time, which I was quite proud of, because, you know, you hear all these horror stories about Kickstarters that don't fulfill for years. I actually had one that I backed nearly 4 years ago.
Yeah, arrive. I had it too.
Was it Seize the Bean?
Seize the Bean.
Yeah. Can't believe it finally arrived.
But, I know. Yeah. I can't wait to give it a try.
It does look great, to be fair.
The components are amazing.
Yeah, it's a very pretty game. I think a lot of people thought it might just disappear into the ether, but it did finally arrive. I don't think it will be anything like that, because the game is it's pretty close. I think we're just tidying up a bit more artwork, adding a little bit more artwork here and there. Mechanically, I think it's done. If social stretch goals unlock a few more things, there might be a little bit more to do there, but for the most part, it's like 98% done. So hopefully we can get to the manufacturing process pretty quickly. And I think Christmas next year isn't an unrealistic date, which is, that's why I put that, I guess. Yeah. So that's the plan.
I think Seize the Bean's big mistake was putting the campaign up before the game was fully developed. I think they have made a lot of changes since the original campaign.
Yeah.
And since I first saw it back at UKGE in like 2016 or something, that was when they were first demoing it back there. So
yeah.
That's taken a while. But it looks like it's been worth the wait. So
Yeah, that's the main thing. It's like what they say in restaurants when your food takes ages. As long as it's really good when it arrives, you can sort of get away with it.
Yeah.
It arrives and it's just, you know, terrible, then it's just the absolute worst. But I'm hoping to be able to play that one at some point. It does look really good.
Well, we have, looking at your backed list on Kickstarter, we have very similar taste in games.
Oh, cool.
So hopefully we'll end up at a convention together at some point and get a chance to play it, because we've backed quite a few similar games over the years. So.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I did spot, I was listening to a little bit of your UKG podcast. I didn't make it to UKG this year because the new dates ended up clashing, unfortunately. But it's the first one I've missed for years. Obviously, there was the one the year before, which everyone missed because it wasn't on. But I think, that's probably the first one I missed in 5 years. It was very weird not being there. So I was kind of jealous.
Did you go to the last one they did in the Hilton, or were you a purely an NEC person?
Oh, that's a good question. I think
2015
might be
was the last one they did in the Hilton. So,
you know, 2016 could have been my first one. Mm. Yeah, I think I'm purely NEC. It's really expanded, actually, to be fair.
It is.
But if they were only in the Hilton in that year, that's crazy.
2015. So everywhere they currently do open gaming, well, I say currently, you know what I mean. That was literally the entire expo. So but even then, when I first went, I was just, all these games, it's amazing. Yeah.
It is good. First conventions.
Yeah.
I remember I went to UKG. I took my mum along on 1 year, and she didn't really get why I had so many games for a while. And then I think she walked into like the halls and she just, you know, saw everything. There's just games everywhere and so much. And then she's like, oh, I think I understand now. You've got so many. It is like, there's just a a whole world of it, isn't there?
There is.
It is great.
Let's talk about post Arcosa now then. So are there any other ideas rattling around inside your head that you're thinking of for the future that you want to share with people?
I don't know if there's any worth sharing. I'm always sort of thinking about an idea. I've had some sort of kind of out the box ideas over the years, like a sort of, I had one that I was working on for a while that was sort of half a game and half like a healthy living kind of thing.
Okay.
It was like it might be something that actually exists now, but it was like you have a character that you could level up if you were good with your habits. Like,
oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. So if if you went for a walk each day, you'd get some like experience points or something like that.
There's a lot of that kind of thing out, because the gamification of healthy lifestyles and looking after the planet and all that kind of thing is quite popular at the moment, I think.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So I think maybe that ship has sailed on that idea, but I don't know. I guess we'll see how Arcosa is received. In the back of my head, there's a maybe expansion idea, maybe. But yeah, it depends, how things go.
Well, it does.
I think I'll definitely have a little break probably once, Arcosa's done and dusted. I find when you're making games, it really takes away from how much you get to play them.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice just to enjoy just playing some games for a little while. But if I know myself, I'll start getting itchy, what's the phrase? Itchy feet? Fingers?
Itchy fingers?
Fingers, yeah.
I think it's fingers.
I'll want a project. I know what I'm like after a while. And then the cogs will get going in the old brain box and I'll start thinking, okay, what's the next thing we look at? Sorry, it's a bit vague. Nothing.
No, it's all right.
Nothing solid, but I doubt it'll be my last game, Arcosa. I could at least say that.
Well, we look forward to hearing what you're doing in the future. We'd definitely like to have you back on the show if you do get to that stage. So if people want to back Arcosa, it is currently on Kickstarter until what's the end date? 7th of October.
Yes, that sounds correct. Yeah, 7th of October.
And it's £35. If there's any of the you've gone down to 12 left now. It was 30. Was it 13 earlier?
I think you did say 13. I do have it open on a screen here. It's ticked up a couple of times, which is always pleasing. So we must have sold at least one more. I guess by the time this goes out, they may have run out, but we shall see.
Yep. And if anyone listening is a retailer, I know I've got a couple of friends who do retail. So if they're interested, they can also pledge for a minimum of 5 retail copies, and obviously they get a discounted price for that as well, buying in bulk. So yeah
that would be great.
And if people want to find out more about you and Toonhammer just in general, where are the best places for them to go?
So the Toonhammer website is toonhammer.com, which is quite straightforward, and that has sort of our links to everything, so on our various social medias and stuff like that. That's the main base. Toonhammer.com is the place to go.
Well, as I say, you're off to a flying start. You're almost halfway there after, 24 hours? What time did you launch?
4 o'clock yesterday. So we're just a little over 24 hours. So yeah, pretty cool.
It's a good trajectory to be on.
Yeah.
So best of luck. We hope to talk to you again soon. And for now, Angela, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So thanks, Angela, for chatting to us. Really appreciate it. And we wish you all the best in your campaign. We think Arcosa is a great game, and I think it definitely deserves to be in a lot of people's hands. So on that note, that brings us to the end of the show. So if people want to find us on social media, we are on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We are TogCast, that's TogCast.
You can listen to us by subscribing via your favourite podcast app, or visit directly soundcloud.com/offlinegamer.
You can watch our YouTube videos. I've got a plethora of unboxing videos to edit and upload, so look forward to those in the coming weeks. So you can find all of that and more at youtube.com/theofflinegamer, and also our playthrough of Dead Space 3 will be on there as well. So.
Yeah. And you can find all of that content and the contact form to get in touch on our website, which is www.offlinegamer.co.uk.
It is indeed. And if you like what we do and want to throw a few pennies our way, you can support us on our what page, Ray?
Ko-fi.
It is Ko-fi. Well done. It's ko-fi.com/Togcast. So, thanks everyone for listening. Ray's doing a little dance now. Yep. Why are you doing a little dance, Ray?
I don't know. I was just doing a little shoulder dance. Okay. Doing a little shoulder shuffle.
It reminded me of something, but I can't think what it was. I'm sure there's a movie or something I've seen where someone does that. But it's gone in my head.
No, you'll probably remember in about 3 days' time.
Yeah, probably.
Which is what happens to me.
We'll be running around the NEC on Saturday and I go, oh, I remember what that was.
Yeah, I've done that a few times this week.
Yeah. Yes, we are going to the photography show this weekend, which I'm looking forward to. So, did we go to the last one together as well? We did, didn't we?
Yes, I believe so.
You were looking at Gorilla Pods, weren't you?
Yes, I did buy one.
Oh, yes, you did. Yeah, you were.
And I bought the... I can't remember. I know you bought like the wrappy uppy, foldy uppy frisbee, shiny frisbee.
The reflector.
Yes, that thing.
I need to get a stand for that, actually. Thanks for reminding me. So,
there you go.
In the last lot of unboxing videos I did, Karen had to stand next to me just holding it for half an hour. So, I need to buy a proper stand for it, yeah.
So, go to our Ko-fi page to pay Karen a wage to hold the reflector up.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, we don't get any money for doing this, but Karen deserves some.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Right, on that note, we'll see everyone soon, and hopefully that'll be our sixth birthday episode, although this should have been it, really, but never mind. Hey.
Oh, well.
We're professional. We'll just do it whenever.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. So until then, it's goodbye.
And goodbye from me.
No, we're not doing the two Ronnie's thing today.
No, fine. Whatever. I'm still saying it's goodbye from me.
Okay, it's goodbye from Ray. See you all soon. Bye.